Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts as they share with you the insider's guide to property investing.
All right, folks, welcome to the Property Couch, your insider's guide to property investing. You're with Bryce Holdaway and Ben Kingsley. And last week I left you, mate, literally going to the couch because your back wasn't so well. And Here we are. There's no stone that you went unturned to do this podcast because you're still in all sorts of grief.
Yeah, got a bit of back problems still. So you got me out of bed to put this one together, but very happy to. This is, you know, one topic that I will be, or I love talking about all the time. So even if I'm half dead or half drugged, it's a topic that I'm pretty happy to have a yarn about.
Yeah, exactly. And we're going to talk about today the hottest market potentially in the world right now, which is Sydney, which leads into our topic today of buying counter-cyclical. But Ben, we've got something to celebrate because last week we talked about the fact that we raced to 1,000 downloads.
Mm.
This week I can happily say, thanks to our listeners, that we are just but a shy, tiny little distance away from being 2,000. So how good's that?
Geez, an extra 1,000 in what? Seven or eight days. That's unbelievable. Okay, so here's the challenge. Let's get to 5,000. So to all you listeners out there, tell the world about what we do. We'd love more and more people to be educated about property. And it's the reason we put this together, isn't it, Bryce? I mean, we don't harp on about it, but we certainly hate seeing people lose money in property investment. And it's such a high-value transaction. You know, this can have huge upside in terms of doing it well, but it can also ruin anyone's potential for financial independence. So if we can at least teach people some of the real pitfalls and dangers, and then also embellish that with some fundamental understanding of what we do, people aren't going to make chronic mistakes. They're still potentially going to need to get professional advice, but we really can clear the air around where not to go.
Yeah, well, agreed. And in using last week as a segue where we talked about investment stock versus investment grade, I think that's a perfect sort of, bridge into today's discussion because there is a real risk that the people in Sydney right now, because of the fear of missing out, which you talked about last week, and the fact that even the taxi driver's giving you advice on which property you should be buying, that people will get caught up with thinking, well, this is a market that's growing anyway, so I don't need to worry about whether it's investment grade or it's just investment stock because everything's going up anyway. But the challenge is we've seen it before.
Yeah, we do. It's called the psychology of the investor. And by that, it's not just attuned to property investing. It's actually attuned to any type of investing. There's the great, I'm trying to think of it, is it the poppies or the daffodil? What was that, great story back in the, 17th centuries where there was a real run on the on a particular flower.
I poppy. I think I know what you mean, yeah.
You know, and then that was the creation of that concept of a bubble that's occurred. And we've seen, in the tech market, so the tech boom and bust. So we've seen these sort of bubble type conversations and events occur. And the psychology of the investor is the reason why we overshoot the mark in terms of fair value. And in the property space, we're a little bit more fortunate because property is an illiquid asset, which means that it's not easy to transact. We can't instantly within a second like we can on the stock market sell a stock. And we can see runs on the market just like we can see, potentially runs on banks. And that's why we had guarantees coming in GFC times. But getting back to the point, the psychology of the investor is one of they convince themselves that this is definitely a winner, first thing foremost, and they think they've got to get in because everyone else is getting in. And then all of a sudden in the property space, because it's not necessarily just like the share market, because they're individual assets and we're taking 100% ownership of them, and because there's a limited stock, or in perceived in our mind as a limited stock, we actually overshoot it. So we go in there and we miss out one, we miss out twice at auction, and we miss out three times at auction. And all of a sudden we just convince ourselves, well, we better get in because this thing's going to keep going and going and going. And the agents, they embellish that, and that's their job. I mean, at the end of the day, they're to get the best result for the vendor. So why I, said to Bryce, I think what a great topic today will be is to talk about the Sydney market and now call it for what it is, and that is it has overshot itself. And now we're seeing prices in locations which just don't represent fair market value.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I guess the what happens from that is you get the rebound property. You know, when you break up with your boyfriend or your girlfriend and then you go and get onto the rebound relationship, there's the potential that you have that with property, because if you keep missing out on these properties that you really want, ultimately you go, oh, bugger it, I'll just get one. And then that's when you get caught up in whether it's investment grade versus investment stock.
Or you go back to the barbecue scenario, Bryce, isn't it? You know, we're having a barbecue and the, you know, the famous Australian topic of property comes up, and then all you hear is one of your mates said, yeah, I actually bought one 6 months ago and I paid $480,000 for it. And now it's worth about $550,000, you know, and so all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, I need to get one of those because in 6 months' time it's going to be worth $600,000. And oh, look, if you can just give me a minute to, you know, have another yarn. I was in the Sydney market in 2001 to 2003. So if anyone knows their property history and their property cycles, this was the biggest cycle that the Sydney market had seen for a good 50 years. And it was like that. Every weekend, it felt like property prices were going up $5,000 to $10,000 a weekend. And that didn't seem like much. But the price point at that time was around the sort of $300,000 to $400,000 median. So, you know, I knew that there was still a lot to go in that particular cycle. But at some point there, property prices grew by around 40%. Now, I was fortunate to get into that market. I got in early and I bought a property in Alexandria. I paid $395,000 for that property. And then over the course of the next 2 or 3 years, it actually went to around that sort of $450,000, $500,000 mark. And so that felt really great. But then really between sort of 2004, 2005, I had that property valued in 2007, and then I had it valued in 2011, et cetera, et cetera. And I was seeing that property was stagnating, you know, so I had a really nice run. I timed the market well. I knew what I was doing. And, you know, but really there was a period of time there where it was giving me steady to flat growth. And so sometimes you're thinking, well, is it still worth going up, you know, holding the asset? Of course it is, because it's a blue chip location. Fast forward to today. And, you know, now it'll sell for $1 million, but it's the next cycle.
Yeah.
So, you know, the message there is, if we're going to be telling our clients telling anyone who's listening to buy, you do not buy at the top of the cycle.
No.
And we're getting close to it.
Yeah, well, history is repeating itself. And just for the listeners who are in Sydney, and, you know, the fact that we're in Melbourne, this is not a Melbourne versus Sydney conversation, because we acknowledge that Sydney's done really well. But Ben's quite right. 01 to 03, there was a significant boom in Sydney, and then there was a period of flat or tracking sideways. In some parts, it was going backwards, particularly back in sort of 05, 06. So the challenge is, in my view, is to try and be a borderless investor, because if you've actually done really well in Sydney in the last sort of 12, 18, 24 months, it's a good time to actually pull some equity out of that market and look for other markets. So if you look back in history, Ben, and you're right, 01 to 03 was quite flat, and then from sort of 04 to 07.
01 to 03 was quite great.
that's right, it was quite good. But then after that, from 04 to 07, it was
very flat.
Performing, in a lot of cases, it tracked backwards.
Or it underperformed pretty much the Australian
combined capitals
for a good maybe 7 or 8 years. Yep.
So the lesson here is that you've got to be looking for the next best opportunity. Now, everyone loves to quote a good Warren Buffett quote, Ben, but be greedy when others are fearful and be fearful when others are greedy. And I think that is the classic case right now for Sydney market. And I also think what you said last week, FOMO, the fear of missing out.
Definitely.
I think you shouldn't get caught up in that cycle, because if you are prepared to be a borderless investor, there are opportunities in the country that are looking really good to be in the upturn part of the cycle. But for first-time property investors who are looking to buy in Sydney, I think that's a real challenge.
And it is a real challenge. And here's the message that sort of supports that. So here we are throwing out these big ideas and these big statements. The support behind that is this. What we've got to talk about here is we're talking about fundamentals of what drives value. Now, what drives value is people's income and their ability to borrow money. And if you've listened to some of our earlier podcasts, you understand the capacity around borrowing power and, you know, how incomes drive that borrowing power. Now, when you get something like that happening, you've got a situation where you've got low interest rates, so everyone feels as if they can actually buy well and they can afford it right now. You know, so from that point of view, we need to make sure that you understand when rates go higher and borrowing power is starting to get affected, you know, momentum slides and interest slides and you know, understanding also on the other side, in the last 12 months, we've had 199,000 approvals for new construction of property, and Melbourne and Sydney are leading that way, Sydney especially in the apartment market. For the first time ever, we've seen more apartments being approved and built than we've seen in the history of Australia. So what the real message here is that once the momentum shifts and that that whole demand driver falls away and the supply is still coming online, two things happen. Unfortunately, those people who have bought into the apartment market off the plan, they feel the real pain of buying in a heated market. 18 months later, they've paid $680,000 for a two-bedroom apartment that valuers are now valuing at $600,000. Now, you can't get out of that contract, people. You've committed to that. There's $80,000 in negative equity before you even start. So that's what we're fearful of, guys. We're conservative advisors. We're conservative educators. We want to make sure that you feel very comfortable that your asset's going to hold up and there's nothing worse than being in that market. So, you know, getting back to the point of the message is, you know, buying countercyclical. So what do we do, Bryce?
Yeah, well, I think half of it is to be take advantage of people seeing it, because in the moment it's hard to see. And I think getting caught up in that that FOMO energy is hard to get out of. I remember, you know, back in, can't remember the exact date when Perth was flying, 05, 06, 07. They did, you know, 20% 1 year and 37% the next. And people were doing incredibly well in that market. But I remember seeing a lady who'd come into the office. I was actually in Brisbane. I was living in Brisbane at the time. And she came into the office and it looked like all the colour had been taken out of her face. And what she had done is, prior to that boom, she'd never been a property investor before, and then thought property investing was really easy because all you needed to do is put your name on a title and you just made a fortune overnight. But as the market came off a bit, and she had, on paper, she was worth a lot in terms of equity, but didn't really have enough of the four pillars of mastery covered, like what we talked about previously.
Yep. Getting the fundamentals right.
And not understanding cash flow management. She effectively was coming to talk to me because she was about, the whole thing was about to collapse because her buffer was about to run out in about 3 or 4 months' time. And so it's all well and good to be able to hold these properties on paper, but if you don't have the cash flow to hold them through when the tide does change, you can get yourself in all sorts of room.
Yeah, you do. And the other message I've got there is a responsibility of government and regulators to, you know, we're in an unregulated marketplace. Now, when you're in that sort of marketplace, if people can borrow more than they can afford to repay down the track, we also have, you know, mortgagee sales and sentiment shifts, and then all of a sudden, you know, confidence falls out of the market and then people panic and then they want to get out. So one of the big things that I'm pushing for APRA to do is to put a ceiling on assessment rates. And what I mean by that is to put a minimum level of assessment rate. Now, the assessment rate, if you remember going back to what we talked about with borrowing power, that's the rate in which the lenders make a call about the ability of the borrower to repay the loan. So it's a buffer range of usually 1 or 2% above what the actual retail rate is of interest that's being paid by the borrower. So I'm calling on APRA to, instead of putting in silly LVR regulations and that, which can be counterproductive for economic activity, counterproductive for first home buyers and upsellers and downsellers, what's important to note here is if you put a minimum ceiling, it means, or a minimum level, it means that people are going to borrow sensibly. They're not going to get caught up in this frenzy, and they're not going to be listening to the hype merchants who are out there in the spruiker space right now, who are talking up the Sydney market. They're talking up investing in all of these areas where, in reality, you know, they're lining their own wallets. They're not necessarily going to be making sure you're lining your wallet in investment returns. So it's really important to understand that if we can get some form of compliance around making sure people don't get into the frenzy of borrowing more and more and more, but in reality, sensible investors are going to say, I don't need to buy in the peak. I need to buy in the trough, and I need to look at a marketplace that might be 12 or 18 months away from delivering gold.
Yeah, Ben, that helped us really well through the GFC, the assessment rate, because one of the things that happens in booms is easy access to credit.
Yep.
And so if the banks knew that, they saw the experience of what happened in the GFC in America.
In the States, yep.
And they decided that, even though rates have been creeping down, there has been that buffer. So it's not as if any person in the street can just roll up and get some cash. And I think that's definitely a good thing. So I guess the message is clear. If you want to be an investor in it for the long term and not an investor who just wants to get in and then get a little bit burnt by the fact that you bought at the wrong part of the market and it tracks sideways. To give you an example, I've just been buying a lot of property for clients in Brisbane, which I think is actually a good market to be buying in. And the prices that I've been paying for properties now in 2015 are not too dissimilar to what the people I'm buying it from paid back in 2007 and 2008. So they've been tracking sideways for some time now. So their experience, if I'm standing in their shoes, they're thinking that property investment doesn't work. But in my shoes, I'm seeing it as a really great opportunity. And fast forward 2 or 3 years down the track, we're obviously very optimistic that the people that have been buying now will actually have a good result there. So in their shoes, they're going to say property investing is really great. So same property, two different investors, two very, very different paradigms, ultimately coming down to who has bought it counter-cyclical and who has bought it at the wrong period of time. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, it's the benefit of hindsight, isn't it? We should have been buying property in New South Wales and Sydney when, you know, the economy was poor and everyone didn't think it would recover and the financial markets were soft. I mean, that was great buying. And those of you who did buy in that time, you know, you're enjoying the spoils today. The marketplaces that you should be looking at now are exactly the ones that Bryce are talking about. It's the ones that might be, you know, looking to, you know, re-engineer their economies and get on path to a broader uplift in economic activity and employment prospects. And so Brisbane's a logical case for that. I mean, the Newman government came through and cut jobs and really slowed, sentiment in the economy. And now we're starting to see the Labor government saying, let's get on with the job. Now, I'm not, you know, advocating the Labor government are going to do the right thing, but the point there is that people in Sydney are going to say to themselves, my $700,000 buys me a property 60 kilometres from the city and it doesn't give me the living and lifestyle elements that I want. So for that same sort of money, I can be buying, you know, 10 kilometres from the city in Brisbane, which provides me with wonderful weather, you know, a lovely river scope. And then, you know, I'm 40 minutes from going down the coast to the beach and or heading up to the Sunshine Coast, which is some beautiful country. So it's those types of sentiment drivers that move owner-occupiers. And as investors, remember, we've always said, the owner-occupiers, they're the ones who control the marketplace. And I don't want to be in a marketplace like it is in Sydney, where almost one in two buyers are investors.
Mm.
You know, that just says to me, one, we're also going to have an oversupply of rental accommodation. And when investors aren't doing well, or they're not renting their properties, what are they going to do? They're going to drop their rents.
Mm.
So yields are going to fall. So again, we're being conservative. There's still some growth in Sydney, but we would like to think that if you get that growth now, you could be giving that back. And we've talked about sort of effectively saying that in probably 2018 to 2020 might be better buying in Sydney than what we're seeing today.
So folks, there you have it. We really want to be buying counter-cyclical. Just for clarity, we have no problem with the Sydney property market whatsoever.
Long term, we love it.
Sydney is a world stage. It's in the top 100 cities as measured by population. So we're not talking about Sydney. We're talking about timing. And the timing right now to be buying in Sydney, in our view, is an optimum. So, Ben, 20 minutes has raced by. If only we were doing a vodcast instead of a podcast where people could actually see that you are on your knees with both hands on the ground, trying to find a spot that's quite comfortable for you.
Let me clarify on my knees. I'm trying to take the pressure off my lower back. So there's nothing to be seen here. No. Moving on, ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has left the building.
No, the point, of course, there is there are no lengths that you won't go to contribute to this podcast. So once again, thanks to everyone who has been listening. We got someone wrote to us on thepropertycouch.com.au this week to say that they discovered us this week. Driving for the 4 hours, and they listened to all of our podcasts back to back, and they were really appreciative of the information that we give. So our goal is to give casual conversational style information about a topic that we're really passionate about, and trying to give you the insider's guide to property investing. So folks, that's all for this week. If you get a chance to go on to thepropertycouch.com.au and feel free to leave us a review and give us a question. We'd certainly love that.
Sorry, I just thought one bit of an idea that just popped into my head. Why don't we upload, so RP Data, CoreLogic, which are a great provider, why don't we upload, they have what's called a chart pack, and we'll put that chart pack up on the Property Couch website. Have a look at that. Now, that's showing the entire Sydney market, the entire Melbourne market, the entire, you know, state markets. So you know my belief in that. There's always markets within markets. But what we're talking about, you'll actually start to see the cycles we're mentioning there. So it gives a 12-month rolling average. So it's a really nice piece of top-line data that we think everyone should at least understand to continue to build their baseline knowledge.
Let's be honest, Ben, it's anyone who's serious about property investing should make this a core piece of reading on a very regular basis.
Correct.
So, and of course, it's Anzac Day tomorrow, so I hope you get an opportunity to remember the sacrifice of the soldiers 100 years ago. So I hope that you get some time to reflect on that. Ben, until next week.
Lest we forget and arrivederci.
See you, folks.